Thank you, Brother Jonathan. So this was the third day. We stopped. The second day, we ended up down in Eilat, Israel, on the Red Sea, the very southern tip of Israel. And today was Saturday. Saturday's itinerary was to leave Eilat on the Red Sea and head back north. And on the way, we're going to stop and hike the Black Canyon. We were going to visit the Haibar Yotvata National Nature Preserve. And then we were supposed to drive up the famous and ancient Ascent of Akrabim, or in English, the Scorpion's Ascent. And then we were supposed to arrive at and float in the Dead Sea at the end of the day. This is a little closer view from the first picture of Eilat, Israel. Again, I apologize for not getting any pictures of the city itself. We were on top of it by the time I realized it was time to take pictures, and then we were in the middle of tall buildings, and the pictures just wouldn't have been very good. Never got a chance to take any pictures of the city itself. But there's the Red Sea in the distance, and Arabia, Saudi Arabia beyond that. The entire southern end of Israel is all part of the Negev Desert. Negev in Hebrew means south. It's a very fitting name, for if you are going into the south, you are going into the desert. Our first stop on our northern journey was the Black Canyon, a recreational hiking area about 20 miles north of Eilat and west of the highway. A lot of hikers and also bikers would come to this place. Before we had even reached the parking area, God gave us a sight you don't see every day. Can you see what's out of the ordinary? Very hard to see on the screen there. Let's turn off a couple more lights, please. There we go. That's a little bit better. Something out of the ordinary there in that picture. I'll give you a better view now. It's a goat-bearing tree. Wow, I've never seen a goat-bearing tree before. He was much at home and probably wondered what was so interesting that all these tourists had stopped and were taking pictures. Then he realized, oh, it's just another bunch of group of tourists. That's the famous statement in Israel. Oh, it's just tourists. But we are not the only ones out enjoying that beautiful Shabbat morning. Many unorthodox had brought their families on a weekend outing. The culture is very similar to America's in this area. Weekends are for the family and for fun. Most Israelis ignore God. The main difference between here, America, and Israel is that they technically have a one-day weekend and a six-day work week. The nation basically shuts down on Saturdays. But things get complicated when you add the quote-unquote holy day for the Muslims, which is Friday, and then add Sunday for the Christians, again, in quotes. The nation as a whole is not fazed by these other 2 days, Friday and Sunday. But Friday, all the Muslim shops are closed, and Saturday, all the Jewish shops are shuttered. And I did not get a chance to visit the Armenian quarter of Jerusalem, but I imagine the shops there are closed on Sundays. So everybody takes turns shutting down. This canyon, the Black Canyon we were in, is a runoff for rainwater. It's basically a dry riverbed, very nice area to hike through. All the rock formations had been formed by water erosion. Of course, it does not rain much in the desert, but when it does rain, it can be in downpours. One would think that the greatest danger in this desert would be running out of water. But the greatest cause of death in the Negev is drowning. A few weeks after we had been there, two people went missing in a flash flood. They were lost. As far as I know, they were never found. God gave us perfect weather the whole time we were there, though. We never were rained on, and we experienced very comfortable temperatures. It was about, I don't know, it hit probably 75, maybe 80 on the day, the hot part of the day we were down here. The first half of the three-mile hike, the canyon became deep and narrow. It was a great hike, except my mind kept telling me there had been massive earthquakes from Turkey to Syria, and aftershocks were felt all the way into Israel in the last few days. And I kept thinking, what if there was another earthquake right now? What if there was another earthquake? But praise the Lord, God protected us, of course. We all had to stop and take pictures of any local wildlife we saw. God made them blend in very well, didn't he? There's something in that picture. Can you see it yet? Center of picture by the green grass. How about now? A little different picture. It's a wild mama goat. And let's see if I can play this. Yeah, can we get sound real quick? Sorry, technical difficulties. We're passing the buck back here, deciding whose fault it was. All right, I think we got sound. Let's try again. You can see the wild goat moving in the background there. Apparently, they're very used to tourists.
Can't scare them.
The reason I know it's a mama goat is because the baby goat came bounding toward her in just a few minutes from the right-hand side.
Oh, my.
Oh, look at that. Oh, seriously.
Very used to tourists.
Took one sniff and backed off.
It might not have been wild, I don't know, but I think it was just fed by tourists too often. My guess. You can see the baby goat coming in. It's right behind the men right now, but baby goat coming in from the right hand side, coming to mama. This would be the Bible's wild goat, by the way. The ibex. There's baby goat. Okay, let's see if we can move on now. This was the halfway point of our hike. We came out of the canyon into a small valley. And this is looking back from the valley to the canyon where we had come from. This whole area is the type of area where the children of Israel would have been wandering around in for 40 years. This is looking at the way ahead, where we were going to go in just a few minutes. On a small scale, we were wandering through the wilderness, just like the children of Israel. We were experiencing the everyday life the Israelites had for 40 years. Can you imagine 40 years being in this type of desert? If you were a shepherd, which is what the Israelites primarily were, what would have been your attitude as you herded your dozens of cattle through this kind of terrain? We often get on the Israelites' case for complaining, but you know what? We would certainly be no better than they. It is rugged and beautiful country, but it has no water anywhere. Except down in the valley, there's man-made reservoirs now. From here, we could see the Great Rift Valley and the mountains of the nation of Jordan. The water in the picture, there's tiny reservoirs down there in the bottom of the valley. You can see it closer up, but you can't see them in the on the screen there very well. They're all man-made reservoirs. They didn't used to be there. It was on top of a hill with a great view all the way back down to the Red Sea in the distance. To the far right, there's a little strip of blue down under the mountains. That's the Red Sea. A closer picture to the right is the Red Sea. It was thrilling to think that we were looking at a view much the same as what Moses and Joshua and all the Israelites would have seen as they came through this area. It's certain that the Israelites marched through some of this area, some area of the valley down below in the distance, because this is the point where they would have traveled into Midian, or come from Midian, from Mount Sinai in Midian. The Bible tells us that Mount Sinai, the biblical Mount Sinai, is in Arabia. And they would have come through this area on the way back to Kadesh Barnea. And then they wandered north of this area. Most of the time they were here for the 40 years. And then when Edom would not let them travel through their country on the way to Moab, they would have come back down here and gotten back into the mountains at the southern point of Edom, which is right at the Red Sea, is the southern point of Edom. So they would have come back down this valley and gotten into the mountains and gone around Edom right through this valley here. It is also not too surprising that one form of capital punishment that God told Israel to use was stoning. This country has an abundance of stones pretty much anywhere you go. So you're always at risk of capital punishment. There are not very many towns in Israel south of Beersheba other than Eilat. No major cities whatsoever. Israel has established some kibbutzim in the Negev, but these are all small communities. So once you get past Beersheba, the next city is all the way down at the Red Sea. It's pretty much completely barren area. Even still, through their invention of drip irrigation and discovering which plants grow well in saline areas, the Israelis are able to farm in this arid land. And that is a grove of, date palms, I believe. Date palms. Our next stop was the National Nature Preserve of Haibar Yatvata. That sign actually says Haibar, if you could read it. This here is now stuffed, but it was the last known living Asian leopard. They are now extinct, but this was the last one that they knew was alive. This would have been the biblical leopard that Solomon would have been talking about when he said that the leopard cannot change its spots. Actually, that might not have been Solomon. It might have been King Agur or the other fellow at the end of the Proverbs. Anyway, the writer of Proverbs. This is the biblical leopard. They had other examples of Israeli animals that were really, truly being preserved by being stuffed. Here's a few native birds and reptile species. So the purpose of this was to show the natural native wildlife of Israel, not anything that has been brought in. And then after we got done in the auditorium, we went outside to see the real animals. Here is the white oryx. And we got there right after full season. So you'll notice that the antlers, not sure if they're antlers or horns. I guess they're horns because they don't fall off. The horns of these animals are pretty straight. It's one of the differences to some of the other animals you're going to see in these pictures. These are pretty straight horns. In the distance here, we saw the Dorcas gazelle. Here's one up closer, a baby Dorcas gazelle. These are all native to Israel. The Adax, curly-cued horns. Closer up picture, got a white stripe on across its muzzle. And we saw lots of ostriches in this preserve. Here is the scimitar-horned oryx. And the male's horns are much more curved. Somewhere along the line, I'm missing some videos. Let me go back and see if one of these is a video. I thought I had uploaded a video of those first ones and of this ostrich here, but I guess it didn't get in there somehow. Sorry about that. I had a video of this scimitar oryx being, as we drove through here, we got a much closer view of them. I'm really sorry that didn't. I was banking on that video for a closer view of those. We also saw the Somali wild ass. This would be one of the two main candidates. We're not sure which one the Bible is referring to when the Bible talks about the wild ass, but this would have been one of the two candidates. Here's a clearer view of the Somali wild ass. Notice the forelegs, the lower legs of the animal are striped like a zebra. And here is the onager. This is the other main candidate for the Bible's wild ass. Not sure which of these two is the one that the Bible is referring to, but either one would work. We also saw the Nubian ibex in this preserve. That's the last large animal we saw there at the preserve. Here's one more video. I actually got a video of an ostrich. Just like a great big chicken. Sorry about all the videos not getting uploaded here. Not sure what happened. Then onward and northward with the nation of Jordan perpetually on the right-hand side as we drove north. When we reached the base of the Scorpion's Ascent, we were very disappointed to discover that the road was closed due to a washout somewhere. So this is basically as close as we got. But there before us was one of the most ancient roads that we would see on this tour, the Ascent of Akrabim. Numbers 34:4 mentions it. And your border shall turn from the south to the Ascent of Akrabim. And let me point out what we're supposed to be looking at here. This is the Ascent of Akrabim. You can see the road back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, going up that slope. That's the Ascent of Akrabim. Your border shall turn from the south to the Ascent of Akrabim and pass on to Zin. And the going forth thereof shall be from the south to Kadesh Barnea and shall go on to Hazar Adar and pass on to Asmon. So the Bible mentions this particular road. It was in use for thousands and thousands of years. Sadly, we weren't able to go up it. After backtracking a bit, we got back on the highway to the Dead Sea Resort area. This was our first view, which it's not a good view in the picture, but this was our first view of the Dead Sea from the south, the southern end. And this is the very tail end, the picture toward the tail end of the Dead Sea. This is what the closest we got to Sodom and Gomorrah and Zoar. Genesis 19:24-28 refers to this area. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he looked toward Sodom, this is Abraham, he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as the smoke of a furnace. And this whole area, down where the white sand is primarily, is all ash. It's a testimony of God's judgment. God's judgment really did happen. You can go down there and pick up chunks of brimstone, real brimstone, and you can still light it on fire to this day. Somewhere around here we have a picture of somebody burning brimstone from Sodom and Gomorrah area. This really did happen. God really did rain fire and brimstone from heaven upon these cities. God is the true God, and he is the God of judgment. As I said, this was as close as we got to Lot's cities of Zoar and wicked Sodom. Genesis 19:20-22. Behold now, this is Lot talking to the angel. Behold now, this city is near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. Haste thee, the angel tells Lot, haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou be come thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. And they know that Zoar is at the southern end of the Dead Sea. And so this is why we also know that Sodom would be at the southern end of the Dead Sea, because when Lot was being kicked out of Sodom, he looked over at Zoar and begged the angel right after he was out the city gates. He said, can I please go over to that little city over there and be safe over there? It's just a little city, and it's real close to, I can see it from here. So anybody that says Sodom is at the northern end of the Dead Sea, up by the Jordan Valley, they're mistaken. It would take way too long, and he couldn't have seen Zoar. He couldn't have been pointing it out. Behold now, this city over here. He's looking at Zoar. He's seeing Zoar from just outside of Sodom. And so Sodom is definitely not in the plain of Jordan. This is part of the Dead Sea Works, where they harvest the minerals from the water and the mud. And this is a great big pile of salt. Are you out of salt? Here's some salt for you. Israel has turned the Dead Sea into a money-making resource. Obviously, they sell the salt, but the minerals in the mud are excellent for minor skin diseases. Today, Israel has an entire line of Dead Sea cosmetic products. The Arabs, who have lived right next to this sea for centuries and have done nothing with it until Israel started making a lot of money in the cosmetic industry, they saw what they were doing, and they started copying Israel. And now they have factories on the Jordanian side as well. But they had to be shown how to do it. We were also given here the rare privilege of seeing Lot's wife. Wow. That's amazing. That pillar, so-called pillar of salt, has stood there for 2,500 years. Yeah, right. And it's a little big. I guess people just grew bigger in those days. Actually, our tour guide admitted that the guides in Israel have pointed out many Lot's wives throughout the years. When one falls off from erosion, they simply pick the next best formation to inherit this austere position. So that's the best one that they have found so far in this time period. In the southern part of the Dead Sea, the water is thick with salt, so thick that salt accumulates on floats that Israel and Jordan have put out there and anchored in the water in order to harvest pure, clean salt straight out of the water, not off of the ground. So those are salt, piles of salt floating out there on top of the water. And we finally arrived at the resort area of the Dead Sea in our hotel, and we got changed into some grubbier clothes, and we're headed down to go take a dip in the Dead Sea. And yes, you can tell you are at the Dead Sea, even though it's a quote-unquote resort area. You never lost sight of the fact that you are in a really dead area. There's no other place on earth quite like the Dead Sea. At 1,390 feet below sea level, the air is thick and heavy and very still. It really felt like a hole that air never blows down into. I'm sure they probably have wind sometime, but I never felt wind when I was there. As for the water, at 33% salinity, it can cause severe burning to the eyes, so they warn you, no splashing. And do not drink it. One cupful can cause death if not treated soon enough. Don't drink the Dead Sea water. The water is extremely clear, as you would expect, but it's not crystal clear. I've seen some mountain streams that were more crystal clear than that. Because it has a clear, gooey look, if you can understand that phrase. You can tell, as you look through the water, something is dissolved in there, too. It's not pure water. It has a very thick layer of salt on the bottom, like sand, but it's all salt. It's no sand. Sometimes you'll step on a hard clump of salt, but there's nothing else on the bottom, just thick salt, pure white salt. The other interesting thing that the guides will boast about is that any and every body type will float in the Dead Sea. Being 33% salt, the buoyancy level is much higher. And so you can see the whole group of us, you can raise your hands and your feet clear out of the water, and you're still floating perfectly fine. In fact, it is so buoyant that once you are floating on your back, it's hard to get back up out of that position. It's really a funny feeling to try to put your feet back down on the bottom. It's like it doesn't want you to do that. And so you're kind of rolling, almost like rolling around on a ball, trying to get your feet down to the bottom again. And here one of the brothers is barely able to get back up in the picture. Whoops, my words got lost. You can float in any position pretty much, on your tummy, on your back, or even tucked together with your feet tucked up to your chest like a cannonball. Just try not to put the water, your face in the water. You don't want to put your face in the water. As for the hotels in Israel, compared to American hotels, forget it. We lose hands down. Now, granted, this one was extra nice because it was a definite resort area. We went to some other hotels that we didn't have good views. I mean, it was like a regular motel in the middle of a city. We didn't have good views or anything. But the few hotels we stayed in, and not just at the Dead Sea, all of them, they might have been considered antiquated. Some of them might have been considered in desperate need of repairs, but their food service makes up for whatever they lacked. Two entirely full meals every day, breakfast and dinner. They have really good bread in Israel, by the way. Really good rolls, too. And, of course, Jews are supposed to be, the Jews in New York City are supposed to be the ones who invented bagels. So they ought to be able to make a good bagel. Forget about our continental breakfast. Stay at our hotel. We have a continental breakfast. Oh, please. And there's no need to go find a place to eat at night. Gourmet food. Food, food, food. Aisle after aisle of food set like a banquet for a king. Granted, there are a lot of garnishes in there. So about half of what you're seeing is garnishes. And you can only eat so many garnishes with your food. But still, they put our hotels to shame. All this food. And this is just one hotel that I'm showing you. Some of these pictures were from breakfast, but there were at least 8 aisles every night of food. All right, that's the end of the slideshow for today. So I wonder, we have a few minutes, about 5 minutes before break time. I wonder if anybody has any questions about what we have showed you, the areas. You can go ahead and shut that off, Jonathan. Any questions about the areas you've seen in these slideshows? I don't know if I can answer the question, but...
Well, you're showing it's so desert and like no plants and water. What would the Israelites have fed all their animals? Did they eat the manna too?
I think they ate the manna too.
And that would have fed all their animals enough?
I think so. I don't think there's any other...
Would it have been more greedy 20 years ago?
Well, they might have found little oases here and there. And yes, the entire region would have been greener because the Sahara has spread. I think it's spreading 20 feet or 25 feet every year. It's growing in width, and I guess it's all the way to both sides of the continent. But anyway, it would have been greener. It wouldn't have been quite so deserty quite so soon north. And so, you know, where Beersheba was might have been where as dry as where they were down there, kind of, is my guess. And there was little tiny patches of greenery here and there. But pretty much even Beersheba is desert now. But Beersheba would have been green itself, because why would Abraham have lived there for so long? That's the main spot Abraham lived. And so it had to have been greener. He was feeding his flocks. And so it was greener all the way much farther down, much closer to the wilderness areas. And so the wilderness areas themselves would have been slightly damper, but not a whole lot. Any other questions? Again, I don't know if I have the answer, but I can try.
Are the ostriches native?
Yes, they would have been all over. You know, there's African ostriches, and so they would have migrated here and there. They wouldn't have been like profuse or anything, but they are something you would have seen once in a while in Israel, back in Bible times. They probably would have gotten hunted pretty soon after the flood, but anyway. Any other questions? The Scorpion Ascent. So that hillside, it was known as the Scorpion's Ascent. I guess because, you know, the scorpion has a really crooked tail, and it's switchbacks all the way up that. Or
is that what it's known for over there, or is that
That's the English translation of the name. So the Hebrew is the ascent of Akrabim. So on Hebrew maps, you'll see it Akrabim. On modern Hebrew, it's A-C-R-A-B-I-M. But in Bible Hebrew, Old Testament Hebrew, it's A-K-R-A-B-B-I-M. But it's the same place. So the scorpion's ascent is just English for the ascent of Akrabim. The Black Canyon is there's nothing biblical per se about that particular canyon. It's just one of the canyons close to Eilat Israel that they've turned into a recreational area, and so we could hike, 3 miles without getting lost because they have it marked out. And so we went to a safe place to go hiking, basically. But as far as biblical, did anything biblical happen there? I have no idea. Who knows? Nothing that I know of for sure. Anything else? All right, well, let's take about a 15-minute break and come back at noon. Thank you.